Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. The body of Hannah Graham has just been found. Or should I say, her skeletal remains have just been found. Found just a few hundred yards away from a park where I and my children would often explore the woods near Charlottesville, Virginia. She has been missing since the night of September 13. She was discovered after a local man reported that 20 to 30 vultures were roosting and circling near an abandoned house in the rural area just south of the city. 18 days later, the police responded to the tip and near a creek behind the home found what was left of Hannah. Her bones and her slacks and apparently nothing else. Hannah Graham was a young white woman, an 18-year-old college student in Charlottesville, safe, intellectual, liberal, cultured, upscale Charlottesville, which I called my home for many years. Hannah was studying for a career in global public health at the University of Virginia. She was last seen in the company of a 6'2", dreadlocked, 32-year-old obese black male named Jesse Matthew, who was walking with her on the oh-so-genteel and pleasant downtown mall, a pedestrianized street filled with expensive shops, restaurants, and taverns. He was walking with his arm around her. After her encounter with Matthew, she was never heard from again. The timeline of the events preceding Hannah's murder, and doubtlessly rape, have been pieced together through witnesses and security camera videos. Jesse Matthew saw Hannah walking alone in the opposite direction from him on the mall at about 1 a.m. She'd recently left a party and may have been a little tipsy and evidently confused. Several security cameras had caught her wandering and changing directions, and she would soon text a friend and say she was lost. The video shows that Matthew waited a few moments and then crossed to the other side of the street, switched directions, and began following her. Just a few seconds later, another nearby security camera captured Jesse Matthew walking right next to Hannah, just to her right, and keeping pace with her. A witness reports that at about the same time, he saw a black male matching Matthew's description walk up to Hannah and throw his arm around her. A Charlottesville journalist, Coy Barefoot, asked one of Matthew's friends, Dave Johnson, if Matthews knew Hannah. He answered, quote, "No, not at all, not at all. He never mentioned her. I don't think he knew her. In fact, I'm fairly certain of it because he walked up and threw his arm around her. That's what he did to women when he was hitting on them. If he threw his arm around a woman like that, that was not usually a sign that he knew her. That was a sign that he didn't. If Hannah knew him, she wouldn't let him put his arm around her." Close quote. Less than an hour before picking up Hannah, this beloved African-American equal had been at the Tempo Bar, where he accosted another woman, a 25-year-old who later stated, quote, "He kept trying to put his hands on my legs, above and below the knee. He'd been way too aggressive all night, putting his arm around me, picking me up, putting his hands on my legs. I looked at him and told him to keep his hands off of me," close quote. A few blocks away, earlier in the evening, Jesse Matthew attacked a man in the Blue Light Grill, completely unprovoked, and wrenched his body so hard that he pulled his hamstring, leaving him injured and limping for days. Then, according to Barefoot, quote, "In the first few seconds of meeting two women for the first time, he yanked them up off the ground and threw them over his shoulders and laughed. He continued to follow both these women at the Blue Light and later at the Tempo restaurant, putting his arm around them, his face uncomfortably close to theirs, touching their backs, their hair, their faces, their legs, until one of them cursed at him to stop. After one of the women slipped off the boots she was wearing, Matthew unexpectedly pulled off her socks, saying he wanted to see her toes. A friend of his for over 9 years described him as a prowler, clarifying his use of the word by adding, which is not to say he was looking for a victim, but looking for a girl who's already compromised a little bit, maybe improve his chances, close quote. At the Tempo Bar, not long before he guided his victim there, Jesse Matthew continued his aggression, this time against a British woman there with her husband. According to a bar employee, Abby, quote, "I was talking to this woman and her husband. I was talking with her about her hair. It was really short and pretty. I remember them because they had British accents. At one point, I remember he, Matthew, was dancing around outside, and he bumped into this British lady pretty hard, just as a way of getting her attention. He was kind of grabby with her and asked her for a cigarette. Her husband was standing right there," close quote. Jesse Matthew guided young Hannah to the Tempo Bar and ordered 2 drinks. They were seen leaving together by Abby, who said, quote, "It was a typical crowded Friday night. I guess it was about 1:40 or closer to 1:45. I remember because it was definitely after last call. He came out the side door. I saw him come walking by and I thought, there's that obnoxious guy from before. I noticed he had his arm around a girl, later identified as Hannah. She was wearing a crop top. When I saw her that night, I remember thinking, she's really drunk. She couldn't walk well. She was slouched into him, leaning against him like she was having difficulty standing up. He was talking to her, and his right arm was around her, not over her shoulder, not at the waist, but around her back and holding her right arm. He was holding her close, like he was almost holding her up. They walked away together up the street towards the mall." Close quote. And that's the last time anyone, except Jesse Matthew, saw Hannah Graham alive. What were the last moments of Hannah Graham's life like? I want you to imagine them. I want you to imagine her final lesson in racial equality. We know she was taken to a wooded, abandoned home site just 4 miles from where Jesse Matthew grew up, and about the same distance from the place, also south of Charlottesville, where the body of another raped and murdered white girl, 20-year-old Morgan Harrington, was found 5 years ago. DNA evidence has now linked Matthew with Morgan Harrington's sex killing, too. We know most of Hannah's clothing was removed and disposed of. And now we know more of Jesse Matthew's past. In 2009, Matthew followed a driver he thought had cut him off in traffic, then punched the man in the face and stole his cell phone, and then, perhaps in fear of the consequences of his impulsive behavior, drove him to the hospital. A few years earlier, he was accused of sexual assault at Liberty University in Lynchburg, though ultimately charges were not pressed by the victim. Less than a year after that, he was accused of sexual assault again, this time at Christopher Newport University, where he was a football player. Matthew, after his arrest in Graham's case, now faces additional charges relating to a 2005 sexual assault and vicious attack on a 26-year-old woman in Fairfax County, Virginia. The woman was dragged into a wooded area, raped and beaten while walking home from the grocery store one Saturday night. Matthew is charged with abduction, rape, and attempted capital murder in this case. Authorities say that the same forensic evidence that connects Matthew to the 2009 sex murder of Morgan Harrington is linked by DNA to this 2005 rape and attempted killing. Morgan Harrington was last seen alive at a concert in Charlottesville in October 2009. Three other girls, aged 17 to 19, have also disappeared mysteriously from the Charlottesville area in recent years, and investigators are looking at these cases anew now that Jesse Matthew has been arrested. It will be difficult for Jesse Matthew's defenders to put over the tired excuses that he was a victim of poverty or the gang lifestyle. For Jesse Matthew is almost a poster boy for multiracialism. He was gainfully employed as an operating room technician at the University of Virginia Hospital. He attended university. He was described as very religious. He was a volunteer football coach at a private Christian high school. His mother states she intentionally raised him in the country, far from gang influences and the bad crowd of the city. Yet, if this poster boy is as guilty as the evidence indicates he is, the familiar wooded roads that wind through the pleasant forests and farms south of Charlottesville became the dumping ground for the dead and savaged bodies of his victims, just as their bodies themselves were also the dumping grounds for his filthy and alien seed. It is evident that Jesse Matthew, like many blacks, has a severe problem in controlling his impulses, and his impulses led him to aggressively pursue and attack who knows how many young women and girls, many of them white. More serious than Matthew's impulse control is the fact that in our current multiracialist society, Matthew and others like him, and even young white people, are taught that blacks have a perfect right to put their arms around, fondle, pursue, quote-unquote, date, and have sexual relations with white girls. No witness in enlightened Charlottesville said he or she saw anything wrong in Jesse Matthew going after Hannah Graham, literally holding her up and walking her in the streets and into bars and plying her with drinks she was too young to consume. Nobody saw this as a red flag, at least not one important enough to risk the charge of racism and do something about it. No one offered to help her. When one man saw Graham's confused wanderings after midnight, he started to follow her in case she needed help. But when he saw the huge black male approach Graham and take her in hand, the witness was relieved to see that she was with someone, and he turned away. That is disgusting and tragic, but not half so disgusting and tragic as the fact that Hannah Graham and uncounted other white victims like her are taught from their earliest school days that blacks are our equals, that interracial sex and marriage are normal and even praiseworthy, and that racism is the ultimate sin. When such a girl is approached by a black, all the ideas about race that the media and her schools and almost certainly her church have taught her conflict with and often defeat her natural inclination to be repulsed and get away. And if she shows a bit of reluctance, even blacks know that little Sue or Mary or Hannah will likely change her mind if asked, "What's the matter? Don't you like black people? Are you racist?" And if she's still a little reluctant, even after that bit of psychological manipulation, or maybe even if she isn't, there's always the Hannah Graham treatment. Statistics show us that what happened to Morgan Harrington and Hannah Graham is not just an isolated case. According to a study published in the American Journal of Public Health, white women who marry black men are 1,242% more likely to be murdered by their husbands than white women who marry within their own race. 1,242%. White males also greatly increase their chance of being killed, if they marry a black partner. And there are also many other risks besides outright murder. Black men who identify as heterosexual are over 14 times more likely to be diagnosed with AIDS than heterosexual white men. According to the 2004 CDC National Vital Statistics Report, AIDS is the single leading cause of death for black women aged 25 to 34. White females who have relations with blacks increase their chances of contracting HIV by a large factor. Even if these white women don't consent to sex with blacks, merely being in social situations with them is risky. Black males rape white women more often than they rape black women, and blacks overall rape at a rate between 4.4 and 11 times higher than whites. And blacks commit interracial rape at a rate at least 70 times that of whites. It's all there in the official statistics, published at nationalvanguard.org. Statistics that for some reason never seem to be in the headlines or nightly news stories on the Jewish-controlled media, despite the fact that tens of thousands of white women, at least, are victims every year. Teresa Sullivan, the president of the University of Virginia, which Hannah Graham attended, spoke of the tragedy recently after Hannah's remains were discovered. She invoked the name of Thomas Jefferson, who founded the school in the early 19th century. But Sullivan, who favors aggressively spending millions of dollars to attract more blacks to her school, while mentioning Jefferson's desire that UVA's students fulfill destinies of high promise, failed to mention Jefferson's multiple warnings and admonitions against racial mixing with blacks, nor did she mention his expressed desire that blacks be removed from our nation entirely, preferably to another continent altogether. Many organizations have sprung up in recent years, founded to protect women from rape, using such names as Take Back the Night and Save the Next Girl, and all of them, I hope, have the best intentions and offer some sound advice for women's safety in the dangerous place America has become. But none of them dare break the taboo of mentioning the truth about rape, race, and murder. None of them warn white women of the dangers they face from blacks. Some ideologues brazenly use these campaigns to further alienate white women from white men, exactly the opposite of what should be done. The National Alliance has been warning of these dangers and presenting the only possible solution to them for 44 years. I am proud to have been there for 32 of those years. Hear this, and hear it well. Things will continue to get worse and worse for our women and children as long as we accept the lies of racial equality. As the white birth rate trends toward zero, as the importation of third worlders continues, and as black and other non-white birth rates continue to be high, the white percentage of the population will dwindle rapidly. Any rational hope of regaining control of the political process was lost decades ago, and it will be at absolute zero tomorrow. We've got important tasks to perform if we want to survive and save our sons and daughters from certain misery, death, and extinction. Some portion of our people must secede from the insane asylum / prison complex called the United States of America and begin to build a new society. A society whose very basis, both secular and spiritual, will be the survival and progress of our race. In that society, we and we alone will hold political power. In that society, we and we alone will control the resources and the wealth. In that society, we and we alone will control the education of our children and the mass media of news and entertainment. In that society, we will secure living space for our people to thrive and raise healthy children, generation after generation. And that living space will be ours alone. Only thus can we end the nightmare world we are heading for today. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom, reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We'll be right back. shout to the sky.